We believe Craig Button will be in studio at some point. We know Darren Dreger is always reliable. Dregs in studio. What's up, buddy?
Well, you know, I had a near incident this past week. Tessa Von Amm is hosting Ottawa Senators games, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm on the panel with her. And I walk into studio, and I've been in my dressing room area there, so it's not like I was late, but I walk up to the set, and it's like 5 to 7, and she's sitting in her chair, and she's ready to go, and I'm like, well, that's weird. Like, I literally said, Tess, what are you doing up here so early? In my head, I was convinced it was a 7:30 start. So I just bounce off, okay, I'll see you in a bit.
Right.
And she didn't say to me, like,
what are you doing? We're up at 5.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you know, one of the audio guy comes running to my area there, and he's like, hey, like, we're on the air in 90 seconds. I'm like, what?
It doesn't. Does anyone have an answer as to why some games start at 7 and others at 7:30?
I hated 7:30 weeknight games.
As a player,
hated,
you mean?
Yeah. I hated them as a player.
I asked the Leafs about it, and they didn't have a firm answer on it. You know, they're kind of scrambled. They've got a handful of 7:30 games and a bunch of 7s. But
I remember when I played for the Leafs, it was every weekday was 7:30. Every Saturday was 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is so that you get people more time.
Traffic and stuff like that.
To get down to the game.
Yeah. And like TV networks, some of them, you want a pregame. You've got other programming. I understand that. Yeah. But it just, it never makes any sense.
No.
Like one night it's 7, the other night it's 7:30.
Yeah.
And obviously it affects the players as well. But you guys just have to go out there and play. I mean, no one's going to use that as an excuse.
No.
Maybe that's why the Leafs are in trouble.
Starting on time, they're, you know, the extra half hour screws.
The Leafs need like an 8 o'clock start. Maybe that'd help. There's our boy Craig Button in studio.
Looking sharp, buddy.
Everybody is. Look, we've dressed it up today, haven't we?
No kidding, man. I'm down playing my
wardrobe.
Casual
Friday.
Well, this dude, you should see him in the morning. I mean, you guys have seen him show up in the morning. The grubbiest dresser in the history
of
TSN.
Today I wore my Buffalo Bills jersey.
Right. Do you actually support the Bills, or was that just because you got it for free?
Got it for free. Thanks to NFL Canada. Shout out. you know what? You grew up in Toronto, you follow the Bills. And the fun thing we've got going on in the morning is we've adopted being a Browns fan this year, and that
Miles Garrett.
Oh, good start.
You got that sweater?
No, we
got to own that.
No, we kind of. We were really disappointed to be a Browns fan.
It's a helmet to the head every now and again.
Who chooses to become a Browns fan?
I think you have to be born into it.
Like your
grandfather,
Dogpound, you know, the hype this year.
Do you know who Ernest Biner is?
I have no idea.
I know you don't. And that's when the dog pound was relevant.
They weren't wearing helmets back then.
Remember Ernest Biner?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I'm glad I don't.
Oh, how dare you do.
Ask him anybody Packers, though.
Packers, I can hook you up. But
Ernest Biner was a real big, powerful running back. Anyway.
I can name James Brown.
The big game in Cleveland was when Denver stopped him on the goal line.
Right.
Ernest Biner got stopped.
Is that right?
That's right. I do remember
that. Was John Elway.
See, I knew
I do remember.
Yeah. Okay, I got you there.
Remember, John Elway was never going to win, right?
Right.
And he was the Stevie Y of the football.
I've got a great John Elway. I think it's a good John Elway story with Denver, right? So I'm in Edmonton hosting Oilers games at A-Channel. Remember A-Channel day? 97, 98. Oilers are playing the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs. So back then, we don't have DeGeros and all that. You literally, you know, recorded your interviews, took them to an affiliate station, and fed them. Booked a satellite feed and fed them. Mm-hmm. So we just finished feeding. Camera guy and I are loading up the van. We're going to call it a day, head to the hotel. All of a sudden, I look down the escalator coming down at ABC is Elway.
Huh.
And that was right at the time when there was all kinds of speculation. He's done. The knees are shot. He's retiring. All those things. So I'm like, all right, I say to my camera guy, roll on him, roll video as he's walking out. Because if I ask him for an interview, he's probably not going to do it. But if he knows you're rolling, then he's going to do it. He doesn't have a chance. He walks down the stairs, and boys, he looked like a 90-year-old man trying to get down those stairs. Like he was holding on to the railing, just trying to limp himself down because his knees were shot.
Wow.
And we've got this on videotape. And he comes down and I said, John, you know, I introduced myself. All I want is a playoff prediction from you.
Right.
You know, he's thinking I'm some, you know, NFL insider. Here I am. Like, yeah, nail him. And he says, can you just stop recording? stop recording. He says, dude, I'll do whatever you want if you destroy that video.
Of him walking down the stairs.
Yeah, he goes, if you promise me never to show that video, he goes, I'll give you 5 minutes, whatever you want. And I said, what did it matter to me? I didn't give a rat's you know what about the Denver Broncos or the NFL. I just wanted his playoff prediction. Yeah.
That's great.
I
saw
some video, Darren, just so you know, like Carlos' second and third round draft picks in the curling draft. That's what a second and third round draft picks look like.
Yeah.
Bust. Before he made a real good selection in the fourth round.
A bust.
Yes. Welcome to the team,
that was a
buddy.
Steal right there.
Well, everybody told me that Bob Weeks was a really good curler, so I took
Bob's
him.
A good but that was your first round pick, first right? Pick. I'm talking about your second and third round picks.
Yeah, I think who I took in the second round.
I think Weeks is in the Curling Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I think he is, isn't he?
And like, isn't he in the Canadian Golf Hall?
Oh, he's in everything. In Ontario, golf and curling.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, Bob Weeksy was a legend. I was, I plead ignorance to that. It was one of our dumb trivia nights that came up. Like, name a TSN member who's in two Hall of Fames or something like that. And I had no idea it was Weeksy. And I guess that's how he made his bones early. Like, the curling game was all Bob Weeks.
I used to spend lots of time with Bob Weeks in the old Briar Patch back in the day.
Briar Patch is one of the best.
My early days.
That picture you posted today was epic.
Have you ever been to the Briar Patch, Carl?
No, never.
It's one of the greatest things about curling. Ever. There's many great things about curling, but the Briar Patch was really
just awesome. A party.
Now they're athletes.
In between matches, they come down, have a beer, like a little bite.
Awesome.
Yep, outstanding. Alex Kerfoot out indefinitely. What kind of timeline are you guys expecting? What kind of impact will this have on the rest of his season?
Well,
what are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, the Leafs have described it as an indefinite timeline, which tells you they don't have an idea. And that's not being, aloof. That's just the reality of the situation. Now, it's going to depend on the swelling and his pain threshold. But there are some who think this could be shorter than longer. Again, it's just all part of the recovery process. If he can deal with the pain and the swelling isn't an issue, and he's nutritionally able to keep himself up in that regard, short term could be 10 days. Put a mask on and away you go. Longer than that, who knows? I think that's why they were using the term indefinite, is because there's some hurdles on the short term that he's got to surpass before they know exactly what that timeline looks like.
Well, it's one more hit for a team that, has been hit pretty hard. That's all self-inflicted. They haven't played well. Like, we know they're 20th in power play, 24th in PK. We've detailed it extensively the past couple of days. They cannot beat quality teams in regulation. Now Marner's out, Kerfoot's out. They can go one of two ways. They can use it as another excuse, or they can use it as a rallying cry. And, I mean, Boston's banged up. They're not going to be feeling any sympathy for the Maple Leafs
Penguins,
tonight.
Penguins, Colorado Avalanche,
right.
Winnipeg Jets have gone through their own challenges.
They're all beaten up here.
Yeah, well, a team's going to have, Carlo, this very well. Teams are going to go through these stretches where you're absent players. And, I always say that good teams don't capsize because you lose players. Teams that capsize are the ones that aren't structurally sound and don't have a lot of depth.
Yeah.
Well, what are the Maple Leafs, in your opinion? Are they the former or the latter?
And I'm going to remind Craig of a conversation we had yesterday on Leafs Lunch.
We had a good, I thought
stuck
it was really
with me,
good.
By the
yeah,
way.
It did. I thought we did really
because
well.
Because, just to paraphrase, the one thing that he said, correct me if I'm wrong, is that maybe the systems of the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't working.
I did. Right? I did.
Not the personnel. Maybe it's the systems.
Yeah.
Well, I don't expect that to change by 7 o'clock tonight.
No.
Well, so what's going to happen here?
We had a comment, just to stick to that systems conversation, we had a conversation earlier about why the Edmonton Oilers are finding success. Do you not think that the system that the Maple Leafs are playing, Babcock preaches D-zone, playing with pace, playing heavy, but usually when you play like that, you want to play in tight games? What's the difference in those tight games? Special teams. Edmonton Oilers are a two-man team right now. They're number two in power play and number four in penalty kill. If the Maple Leafs special teams, what's 20th on the power play, 24th in the PK, were half as good as they are now, wouldn't that be the difference in some games?
Probably.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
There's no question, but that's structural.
Yeah.
And Ferraro talked about that earlier in the show, right? I heard you guys talking about how, what would concern him is how they're always looking for that seam pass, right?
Yeah, they need a shot mentality.
And They don't have that, and
didn't we talk about that?
Yeah, yesterday too. Tyson Berry.
Tyson Berry.
You know, I understand the loyalty to Morgan Riley. Who doesn't like Morgan Riley? This isn't a shot at Morgan Riley. It's what's best for your team. Morgan Riley doesn't shoot the puck as well as Tyson Berry.
And number one power play unit isn't clicking right now.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys believe in mojo? And I mean, they keep saying we got to get our swagger back and all that kind of stuff. Ultimately, it's confidence. But I can't imagine they're a fun group to be around right now. Like, just watching from afar. If you keep losing like this, you can't be. I mean, I don't know how you would perceive that, Craig.
The way I look at it, too, when I think that the Leafs have a myriad of issues and challenges. Pick one and fix it. Focus your attention on one. Don't try to fix them all at the same time. So, you know, like, to me, I'm going to fix the penalty killing first. Huh. That's the power play. I'm going to get to that because there's a skill there. I'm going to pick one and focus in on, say, okay, tonight, this is where we got to be good. Up ice pressure. You know, making sure that we don't give up the shot or the cross seam pass, whatever it may be.
Block good. Shots.
But one, pick one thing and fix it. And
right.
Then go on to the next thing. And you try to fix everything all at the same time, you just continue, I think, to run into the same problem.
Yeah, I think with the penalty kill, as much as it's structure, I don't like the personnel they use either. But that's what Dubas has supplied. You got Cody Ceci and Justin Hall killing penalties.
Yeah.
What are you expecting? I don't think they're capable of doing that.
And you said this on the morning show this morning, that Cody Ceci, you saw him play in Ottawa many times.
Yeah. Yep.
What's his game? What's his strength? Being offensive.
Yeah.
And now he's your top belly killer?
Yeah, I mean, he's a tweener right now. He's lost in his own world, or it seems to be. And then, you know, you look at his minutes. His minutes are up there.
He's playing 20. He's averaging 23 minutes a night.
He's being relied on, and so there's either a comfort level from Babcock's perspective, or he's looking at it and going, "It's the best what I got.
What else do I have?
Well, I don't really have an option, you know, unless you really bring out the blender on that back end and start moving guys up like Dermott and others to give them a bigger taste. But he, to me. And this isn't an indictment on Cody Ceci. I don't know him. But brought into the National Hockey League because they thought he'd develop into more of an offensive defenseman. He showed signs of that in Ottawa, but not consistently and didn't get to that next level of being an offensive defenseman. So you bring him into Toronto, and you're hoping that if you put him with a reliable offensive guy like Morgan Riley, he'll find his place. I mean, Ron Hainsey, correct me if I'm wrong, was an offensive defenseman.
Starting his career.
Yeah, and I mean, he made the switch, and now he's getting a bit more offensive opportunity in Ottawa, but, you know, still arguably one of the best defensive defensemen guys and a penalty kill spot.
And I'm going to, like, Cody Ceci, to me, like, he's a good player. He brings a certain skill set. I don't see him as a top-pairing defenseman. I really don't. And I said it from the day they acquired him, and part of the reason why he was exposed in Ottawa was because he was playing too much. I said, if Cody Ceci, you focus more on the quality minutes that he gets instead of the quantity of minutes, you're probably going to get more out of him.
Yeah.
To me, on this Maple Leafs team, he's a 5'6".
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you guys the question.
Yeah.
If you remove the name on the back and the salary that each player makes, when you watch Cody Ceci play and you watch Justin Hall play, do you notice that much of a difference?
No, and I think Justin Hall has made some really nice strides in this game, but... I'm going to jump on your 5'6 comment. So is Justin Hall a 5'6 defenseman?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so CeCe's a 5'6 defenseman. And
Dermott is too.
A 5'6 defenseman?
Yeah.
Guess what? You got some gaps.
Right. Okay, but here's the thing.
As Darren just said, now how are you going to throw out that blender? I mean, and this comes back to roster construction.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing. This is my idea of the Maple Leafs defense pairings. Why don't they try to identify a shutdown pair? You have Jake Muzzin. You've praised Justin Hall for the game that he's played so far this year. Why don't you try them together and see if they can give you a shutdown pair? Justin Hall plays a bigger game, a lot of simpleness to his game. Mm-hmm. And you want to get Tyson Berry's game going? Play him with Morgan Riley. Tyson Berry in Colorado played on the top pairing there. He played against other teams' best players.
Right.
Now, you're not going to... He's not the best defenseman that the Maple Leafs have. But maybe him and Morgan Riley can create a spark.
It can't be worse than what Riley and CeCe have
been. Just try it. That's all I'm saying. Just try it.
I understand the focus on Barry, and I've been a part of that conversation. I don't think Morgan Riley's struggles have been highlighted enough. And it's too easy to cop out and just say, well, it's because he's CeCe. That doesn't explain why he's, you know, his gap control is awful at times. Why his reading of the play this year has been baffling at times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll hold the line, and I'm watching it thinking, what do you think you're accomplishing? Like, honestly. And this is your number one guy. And I think that, like, it's the high-end guys that you got to be concerned about, too. Not the third-pairing guys. It's not the guys further down the list.
I agree with that.
Yep. The high-end guys have got to play a lot better.
Well, I go back to the Tampa game. Do you remember the Tampa game when, I forget who scored right off the bat, but it was exactly how you described Riley. It was like, you're holding the line where, and you're pinching outside the like it's, and they went right down and scored.
Right,
I think it was Braden Point.
Yeah, I think you're right, and you're just scratching your head because it was a head scratcher.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, huh?
And Freddie's bailed them out a few times.
I agree.
Where you're like, wow, that was a stop. If that went in, we'd be like, who made that odd man rush come to fruition?
Right,
and it's 44 a lot. And he might be compensating, but that's, you talk about system and structure. You've got to get to him and say, you can't do that. Like, you can't play all over the ice. You can't. You're not capable of doing it. Nobody is. And you're going to put yourself in a precarious position, and we're going to get burned here.
Well, here's
because they're scoring goals.
Here's a guy who clearly wants to play offense more than he wants to play defense.
And they need defense.
Yes.
Like, they're second in the league in goals for and second in the league in goals against. So, goals for is not going to be a problem.
No.
Like, you know, the power play, I think, will even out at some point. I think they're too good. The penalty kill, I'm not as convinced. I'm not.
That's why I say focus there.
And with the injuries that they have up front, I think it's going to get a lot worse. And not from an offensive perspective, I think from a defensive perspective. Mitch Marner, for the most part, is at least defensively responsible.
Absolutely.
Alex Kerfoot is developing into that. You take two of your better defensive forwards out of the mix, and I mean, I think they're disjointed anyway up front, and I think that that's a big part of the issue because there is no trust between forwards and defense there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got two of your top defensive forwards out of the mix and nobody there to fill those holes.
Leafs Bruins tonight on TSN 4 and right here on TSN Radio. Then they're in Pittsburgh tomorrow night. Good seeing you, boys. Thanks for popping
in. Sticking us out?
Yeah, you guys got to go. Well, you can stick around for my best bets next, but that's a fact.
Well, 2 minutes late, you've got to stay an extra 2.
I thought you were going to grind me. I told you to go Steelers last night. I was.
Al's brother wants that on the record.
Okay,
you were the one that pushed me over the edge.
Wait a second. I was right about the coaching, though.
You were. And
then Mason Rudolph just couldn't throw the ball low enough into his own receiver's hands.
I should have known better, though. I was lean in Browns, and I trusted Al's brother and you, Craig. For the betterment of the show, I went with Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it bit me. But O's not here, so maybe I'll find a way to get out of the bet.
What was the bet?
$50.
$50?
Yeah, I'm still plus money on him.
I feel like I have to contribute part
of it. No, don't bother. Yeah. It's Al's brother. We'll blame him. all right, boys. Good seeing you. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, and Craig Button.